The after party starts
right now. Power up suits and welcome in to another episode of The After Party. My name is Will, and with me today, as usual, is my good friend, the one and only Nate. What's happening, man?
Not too much, man. Finally got my hands on some new stuff, and I'm excited to continue to see where both where all the the gaming hobby world takes me.
Oh yeah, what new stuff did you get?
Finally got my hands on the second edition Frostgrave book, so I've got some cool little guys I've been working on to get ready for that, and excited to get those minis on the table.
Oh, that'll be fun. Well, we're not talking about Frostgraves today, but we are talking about some characters that are maybe Frost adjacent, right? I mean, wouldn't you say that Thor and Valkyrie...
They're certainly very Nordic.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've had things in Jotunheim, which is the land of the Frost Giants. So, I feel like that's totally legit. I feel like that was a good comparison. But I don't know. Tell us what 100%. You guys think. So, yeah, we're going to be talking about Thor and Valkyrie today. Taking a look back at those characters who have been with us for a while now. And I don't know about you, but I would say pretty highly regarded characters. And also, real quick, before we jump into looking back at these characters, let's also talk about the slight bit of news we had yesterday, and that was Kingpin's panel to play. Did you get a chance to read that?
I gave it a good look over. His leadership ability looks to be fantastic.
Yeah, in an objective-based game, it's twofold. So one, you will be able to potentially pass objective tokens around to characters. So, like, let's say someone's about to go down, you could pass that cube fragment off to somebody else. My guess is there's a range restriction, but we don't know yet. And then
surely a range restriction, maybe even a power cost, but having mission objective, or at least mission objective in part of what Kingpin's leadership ability is going to be, seems really strong.
Right, and then the second part of his leadership is that allied characters can count as two when securing an objective.
As long as they're healthy, but also still an insane ability to be able to have tagged on there, especially since Kingpin, Big Boy himself, I'm sure is pretty bulky and going to be hard to move off of a lot of the different objectives.
It sounds like it. Avoiding collision damage and stuff like that, so yeah, I'm really intrigued by what I'm hearing and what I read there. And it just kind of leans more into that objective play, which, as you know, I really like. That's just kind of how I like to play in general, is just, you know, hardcore objective focus versus like a kill squad. But what it also, like, subtext, reading between the lines here, do you think it makes it sound like some of these characters are going to be pretty expensive because you're not going to be able to field a lot of them?
It's tough to say, because the only other character that I can really for sure imagine is going to be in affiliation is Bullseye at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can't see Bullseye being a four threater. I see him kind of in that range of probably not a two realistically, but probably a three. And so I'm very interested to see who else gets to team up within that affiliation and where it goes from there.
Yeah, I'm really excited for more reveals about Kingpin and the Crime Syndicate affiliation, as it's going to be called. Really looking forward to that. So, yeah, any other news out there? I don't think I missed anything else.
No, I think that was the big one, obviously. Tomorrow we have Doctor Strange, along with Wong, Ghost Rider, Ant-Man, Wasp, releasing tomorrow in the U.S., which was also very exciting.
That is very exciting indeed. So, let's now move on and talk about these really great characters. So, Nate, who would you like to start with? Would you like to start with the Prince of Asgard or the Warrior of Legend?
Man, either one is a really strong candidate for just being one of the best models in the game, which I guess consequently makes this one of the better packs in the game.
Exactly.
Let's start with the Prince, though.
Okay, so let's talk about Thor here. So before playing any games with Thor, Nate, what were your thoughts?
Honestly, I was just excited to finally have Thor. He's one of my favorite Avengers. This is pre the movies and everything else. I just love the heavy hitting style of him in the comics, being one of the kind of the top tier Avengers as far as heavyweights. And man, he doesn't disappoint. I think outside of Hulk, he was the first character we ever got to see that has a size 4 throw,
Yep.
not only with his strongest Avenger, but then also one built into his strike, which I think I have downplayed, which we'll talk about here in a little bit more. But the thing that really excited me was his four Asgard ability, basically a built-in charge for a character with flight that also has a chance to stagger is solid.
Yeah. So solid is, I think, underselling what I would say for Asgard and Thor in general. I'm with you in that. One, he was one of my favorite characters growing up. Like, my uncle gave me a bunch of old Thor comics when I was growing up, and I just always enjoyed the stories and just like they were so fantastical, you know? So getting Thor in the game was a lot of fun for me. And then when looking at this character, you look at him and you just think, man, what a bruiser, what a brawler. Is there anything this guy can't do in this game? Because he's one of the strongest characters we have in the game. You know, you mentioned Hulk as a good example there. So Hulk is sixth threat, and he has obviously more health, but that's really the only thing that Hulk has a leg up on Thor is just in the health department.
That's
And
only like what, 6 health difference?
So let's see, 6 and 8. So yeah, I mean, that all, you know, factors in. So like Thor to me, without playing any games, was just awesome smash face. He's going to be a force on the tabletop. So with that though, what surprised me once I got games in was just really how good he was. Like I underestimated just how good he was, I think. Like, I knew he was going to be a force. I remember when we went over his card talking about all this different stuff that he had on there. Like, holy crap, he's got a throw on his strike. Oh my goodness, he can throw size 4. Oh my goodness, his charge can potentially stagger someone if he does damage. That's all really good. But then you get him on the table and you realize just he's everywhere. He does everything that you would want in a frontline strong character, and he's got great defenses to boot. What surprised you, Nate?
The two things that surprised me were, I guess maybe even three things, was how effective his different attacks were. So one of the things I completely underestimated at first was how strong the wild throw that he has on just his basic strike is for dealing additional damage, both via collision with the initial character getting that guaranteed one, but also once you start hitting some size 3 or even size 4 characters with it, how much additional damage that throw can be putting out there. Then one of the other things that really surprised me was his hammer throw. Being able to apply the shot condition that's one of those few conditions out there that really can make you question whether or not you want to spend an action shaking it, because a downgrade on your dice is huge, especially if you're just trying to get power back via strikes or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that 100%. And the hammer throw is probably more surprising to me just because I think this was probably the first instance of shock, if I remember correctly. And you start to realize how strong a condition that takes away from your dice pool is. Shock being a good example of this, incinerate being an example that we have in the game now. But you're right. It makes you really question whether or not to shake it, because I, as a player, like, I'm thinking to myself, okay, if I've got shock and I have a 4-dice strike to generate power, well, that 4-dice strike all of a sudden becomes 3, and that seems pretty useless to me. So I'm with you right there. But the one thing that I will say that surprised me is the God of Thunder. Like, so when we did the podcast initially talking about Thor, I didn't think God of Thunder would be too useful. And I'm still, it's very situational, but at the same time, you feel so good when you get a God of Thunder off. And it plays so well on something like Gamma Shelters or Origin Bombs, where people are kind of clumping up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
God of Thunder is definitely strong. I think the thing that kind of surprised me, though, is there are more situations that I would rather just do an additional strike rather than do the God of Thunder.
Exactly.
The as much power as it costs, you're not able to get two off in a row or anything. So sometimes it's better to save that six power to do a four Asgard, get things, or maybe even do the strongest Avenger first, get a throw off, get things lined up so that then Thor can do the four Asgard and have two strikes with the potentials of getting two additional throws.
Exactly.
All for the exact same power cost.
Exactly. No, I'm with you on that 100%. So what does Thor do well then?
Everything we just talked about. He's able to put out solid statuses between stagger and shock. He's able to throw people clear off of objectives, whether that is just with his naturally built-in throw or getting a little bit lucky on his strike. Man, he does just about everything you could want, which I guess shouldn't be too surprising because he is a five-threat character.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that he does everything well because he does everything you could want, I think. And what does Thor do? Well, he wrecks face. But that is the simplification, because what he does really well is threaten the other characters. Like, I know that that seems kind of weird to say, but like, no one, save maybe MODOK, is safe from Thor. And even MODOK is going to have a problem when Thor throws a building in his face, or throws a Hulk, or a Black Dwarf, or throws MODOK. So there's things that, you know, but I'm talking like from a strike perspective, you know, MODOK is going to avoid the throw. But
that's the only thing he avoids. You're
exactly
able to still put out the stagger condition from the four Asgard.
Exactly.
You're still able to shock on him because hammer throw is just a flat effect. So there's still very solid ways for Thor to deal with, at this point, pretty much every character, whether it's just by the sheer damage output he can put in or just from the statuses he can use.
Right. And let's think about this, though. Like, so what he, another thing he does really well is, so he controls an area of the board. And I don't mean that because he has an area attack, but I mean that wherever Thor is must be accounted for. And if you go into Thor without a plan or without an ability to do whatever it is you're trying to do onto Thor, I mean, you're going to have a hard time. And you can look at a character like a Shuri who can push, but she pushes short, Thor moves medium. So you have to kind of think about all those things when you go into Thor. And so that's what I mean by, like, he threatens the board so well. And he also plays a little bit of the control game too, which mm-hmm. I find to be pretty interesting with his throw on his strike. So a lot of characters, they have to do their strike and then do something else to get whatever control element to secure their victory points that they have. But Thor is able to strike and then throw a model away. So if it's on the Gamma Shelters, if it's on a secure point, if it's on an Infinity Formula, an Extremis console, whatever, well, he just can throw them off of that. And if they've activated, then they can't get back. So I really like that slight control element that he has built into his strike, layered onto the fact that he has a throw that is a medium throw, which I just love.
Yep, no, all around solid character. So I guess the next natural question is, what does he do poorly?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And I don't really have an answer for what he does poorly, other than maybe, like, what are his faults? I would say is, like, Mystic attacks, he is a little bit weak to Mystic, right? As you can see, he's got a 3 defense on his Mystic attacks, but if you focus him down, he can go down. You know what I mean? But you've really, really got to commit usually a lot of resources to doing that.
Yep. He's got a lot of health to chew through. Ultimately, yeah, his defense dice are his weak point. Because we all know that dice are swingy enough as it is, but on his attacking side, it's kind of mitigated because, like, even if you don't deal damage from the strike, if you get that wild, you're still dealing extra damage from the throw.
Right.
You can kind of run down through that list. But on defense dice, and Thor having no additional way to modify him, he can definitely just kind of get unlucky at times, or... again, his mystic defense that you already pointed out, definitely a weak spot for people to pick on him on.
Yeah, the fact that he doesn't have any kind of dice manipulation on defense dice, or offense really, but defense specifically, definitely creates an issue. Another thing is that he's only one model and he costs a lot. He costs a lot of threat value. So when you're thinking about how to construct your roster and how to construct your list for a match and everything, Thor takes up a lot of capital. And if there's a Killmonger on the other side of the table, then it's potential that Thor could go down somewhat easy. I don't want to say easily, but you know, that's a threat you have to be aware of, and or a MODOK on the other side of the table. Those are all characters that you have to account for as Thor, and there's only one of them, and he's such a high cost that if you lose him, if he gets KO'd, I mean, that's hard, and it's hard to KO him in general, but once he's flipped, he has 8 health, 8 stamina, so getting a one-shot KO is extremely difficult, but it can be done. So yeah, I think that just the defense is where his faults are. And then just there's only one of him. He can only be in one place at a time. And if he's very susceptible, if you're not playing the Asgard affiliation, he's very susceptible to the condition game. If you're playing the Asgard affiliation, well, not as bad. But the fact that a stun really hurts him, a stagger will hurt him. You know, all of these things will contribute to hurting him. And conditions are just good in general, right, Nate?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is one thing that his leadership ability when you're playing within the Asgardians, which is a solid affiliation that looks to only be getting stronger with Angela coming out and Enchantress hopefully being added to that affiliation. He's able to deal with those status conditions himself quite well.
Exactly. But you have to be playing that affiliation. So, and it's already an extremely expensive affiliation as it is. Throw in Loki with a Mind Stone, that's 2 5 threat characters. Hela's a 4, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty potent amount of characterisms you got there, but you know. So now that we've talked about his affiliation, let's talk about affiliations that Thor fits into in general. And obviously, Asgard is his affiliation. I think that Asgard is one of the... It's a really great affiliation right now. I think that a lot of characters benefit from it, but as I said a second ago, already to get the affiliation bonus, your cost is high. I mean, minimum, you're probably going to have Thor and Valkyrie. So that's 8, and then throw in a Loki or a Hela, and you're looking at 12 threat right there. So... Mm-hmm. Getting to those 15, those lower threat value crises are going to be difficult, I think.
Yep. Also, obviously, he plays an Avengers quite well. Captain America makes Thor a turn one threat with the leadership ability. That way, Thor can move and charge or even just double move and start hurtling terrain around on turn one, making him an earlier threat. But outside of that... there's not really any affiliation that I can think of that's going to turn away Thor. Maybe the Guardians don't have as much use for him since they usually prefer going wide and stuff. But I can't really see anybody rejecting him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he fits well in every affiliation. And one of the things that I have to think about whenever... Let me ask you this, Nate. So you're an Avengers player more than anything, but you've played it all, but you're mainly an Avengers player, right?
That sounds fair, yeah.
Okay, so when you're building your Avengers list, do you start, well, obviously with Captain America, but does the next character added, is it Thor? And if you're going to add Thor, does that affect the rest of your list, or does leaving out Thor affect the rest of your list? Like, how would you say that Thor impacts your roster building, especially as it relates to Avengers?
It really depends on the threat total and the mission layout. Thor is able to single-handedly kind of hold a flank on his own on any of the E objectives, which is like the extremist console layout. So that's in those D, situations, he like really appeals. But once you get into some really higher threat totals where he can be more easily targeted down, sometimes I try to go a little bit more wide with the Avengers. But I will say at 17 and 15 threat at least, I have a pretty solid idea of running Cap, Thor, and two other four threat characters to round out my team.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty potent list, I think, with Cap being probably your least likely to do damage of all of those.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah, no, I think whenever I'm looking at a list and whenever I'm constructing an Avengers list, I look at it, there's two characters right now that I feel like really affect my list building. One is Thanos, and it's like we've talked about this before. There's the Thanos Avengers list, or the and then there's the Avengers. There's a whole other thing, but Thor is another character that I definitely take extra care to watch and look at and make sure that I'm fitting in appropriately, because like you said, on those smaller threat values, you can get away with putting a Thor in there and only having a low model count, because Thor can detonate three cost characters really easily, single-handedly, from not only his strike and then throwing that character into one another character. They roll poorly, boom, they're already gone. That's down two characters. Thor can handle that kind of stuff. But in these bigger lists, you really have to watch out. These bigger threat values, you really have to watch out for Thor, because if he's the big threat on the board, well, if I'm playing Guardians and I see a Thor over there, okay, fine, I'll send some Nebula and Gamora over there to really try to assassinate him as fast as I can. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just a thought when you're playing around with Thor. So, Nate, go ahead and ask your favorite question.
Yeah, man. So, do you think that Thor has gotten any better, worse, or stayed about the same since he was released back in March?
All right, I'm going to look at this through the lens of the Defenders that are coming out. Yeah, that are coming out tomorrow. Or, what is it? Friday. So, yeah, I think he's gotten better. I think that the Defenders are an expensive affiliation as it is, but not so much more expensive than what Asgard already is. And I think Thor would benefit really well from the Defenders affiliation. So another fault that we probably didn't mention earlier is the fact that his strike and his hammer throw are both physical attacks. And that is the highest general defense in the game. So characters like Miles Morales, like Peter Parker, you know, like that, are able to mitigate some of the potential damage because of the ability to roll the extra dice from physical attacks. So that, I think, is a weakness of his, but you put him in Defenders and all of a sudden that becomes a mystic attack for one energy, and he has the power generally to do that. So I really like him there, and I think that I can't think of any specific tactics cards that have increased his value, although I do think a no matter the cost is fun on him, because it's like he should have the power to do most stuff. But if you really, really want to make sure to get that extra little bit of stuff, you can do a no matter the cost to save some power. Or another one that I think that he can somewhat benefit from is an all you've got. A Thor all you've got turn where he's like, let's say he's close to being dazed. So you do his turn, then you play all you've got. He gets a whole other turn, and then he's dazed. That's so that could be so good and so game changing. So I do think he's gotten better. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think he's honestly probably stayed about the same, but with as many other models that have come out and things that could possibly have tried to dethrone the prince, I think him being able to stay on top for as long as he has is kind of a compliment all its own.
Yeah, I feel that. And I just think that he was so good when he came out because there wasn't really anybody else like him. And now there are other characters that aren't like him per se, but that have a big board presence, like Corvus with a reality gem has a huge board presence like a Thor does. But I still feel like that Thor has just improved kind of along with some of those other characters. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Any other thoughts on Thor?
No, I think we did him justice.
I think we did too. And to everybody out there listening, to all the suits out there, there's obviously probably more that we could say about Thor. He's such a good character, and there's definitely strategy and stuff like that that we could maybe dive a little bit more deep into. But we'll probably try to look at that at another time when we talk on regular House Party Protocol stuff, just in terms of general strategy tips. But one thing I got to say about Thor overall is, while he is very strong and while he can wreck face, he is not invulnerable. So definitely be careful running him up in there. But he's really good, and he's going to do a lot of work. But he can go down. So, Nate, before we move on to Valkyrie, we have a giveaway to address.
Absolutely.
If you've been listening for a while, you would know that we have been doing a Green Goblin giveaway, and that giveaway is finally over, and I am here to announce the winner after a random comment selection internet tool has decided that the one and only David Kirby of the Inspiring Monologue has won the giveaway. So, way to go, dude. Really appreciate you listening and occasionally being on with us. And yeah, I hope you enjoy your Green Goblin model. And everyone out there, all the suits listening, be on the lookout for some more giveaways coming down the pipe. And yeah, congrats, David Kirby. So with that out of the way, let's go ahead and talk about Valkyrie. So Nate, Valkyrie is a really interesting character in this game. When she first came out, I think she was viewed as pretty good by some, very good by others. I know Jacob Collins of the Xavier Protocols really, really liked her. But before playing, Nate, what were your thoughts on Valkyrie?
Man, it's hard to think that far back about her. But I guess with that in mind, I guess I didn't think that much of her one way or the other. I definitely enjoyed playing with her in the Asgardian affiliation, because I know that back then I really liked Thor, I really liked Hela, and to kind of keep the cost down, I went with Valkyrie over Loki most of the time, and she always performed admirably for me.
So, yeah, dude, I liked Valkyrie. I think I was underwhelmed at first with her, and I didn't quite, I think, understand really what her deal was, if you will. So, like, I thought she was going to be really good. I thought Dragon Fang, very good. That's a very good attack. I thought that her Asgardian Might, her throw being cost of 2, was very good. Now, granted, it's only size 2 stuff, but still, power cost of 2, very good. But where I kind of didn't understand her value was mainly on her Warrior of Legend superpower. And it really kind of changes things up, I think, in general. And we can get into that here in a few minutes. But that's what I would say surprised me when I first got her on the table was just how good she really is. She is an assassin character, really, if you think about it. I mean, she has a 5-dice strike, which is very strong, gets her the power as usual, but it's range 2. And then Dragon Fang, also 7 dice, but it only costs you 3. And then if you hit that wild, you get to do a strike attack on that same target. Or, let me rephrase,
or
a strike attack on another
target.
Right. So I think that that's, like, those two things right there. I mean, she's so strong, and she can generally get to that Dragon Fang pretty quickly. Then the throw, the charge, and Warrior of Legend just create a character that just really gets where they want to go and assassinates the character that they're going after. What surprised, what surprised you?
I always picture her just kind of as a whirlwind of destruction. I've commonly referred to her as my wood chipper.
The wood chipper. Hey, the wood chipper's coming at you. That's pretty good. That's bad and good, like, simultaneously, because now I'm thinking about Fargo and the wood chipper scene from that. And if you haven't seen Fargo, it's a really great movie by the Coen brothers, and there's a wood chipper scene. And Valkyrie, yeah, totally fits the wood chipper mold. So, yeah, like, she really gets in there and does some dirty work. And she only costs 3, which...
Yep, and I think that's kind of what surprised me to get into the question I think you already asked, which was just how much damage output she is able to put out for a 3-threat character. While still having a very versatile set of tools at her disposal to make sure that that damage can be pushed through, whether that's with the Warrior of Legend, kind of adding a little bit more consistency to her, the Dragon Fang, getting the flurry chance, but also having a throw and charge just make her a very consistent character, and she can do all of those things pretty much from turn one because she starts with that 2 power.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Like, she is ready to go out the gate, and I love that so much. So what would you say are her faults?
The lack of different attacks that she has, or attack damage types, I guess. With Thor, he at least has that energy attack if he really wants it, but being completely physically focused, it does kind of, if she starts running into a character like Captain America or Black Panther, it makes trying to push them over extremely difficult.
It does. And I kind of skipped over her, what does she do well, before getting to the faults, but we'll go back to that in a second. But yeah, I'm with you. The fact that all of her attacks are physical really, really kind of puts a cap on her potential damage output, because when she goes up against a character like a Venom, she's going to struggle against a Venom because he rolls 4 physical defense, 1. Warrior of Legend would not work with Venom because of his symbiotic instincts, and she wouldn't be able to throw him. And she doesn't have an energy attack. So all of that creates, you know, a character that, while strong, you have to make sure you send at the right targets.
Yep, you know what I mean? Pretty much. She is a deadly missile, but for her to make the largest impact, she definitely needs to go to a particular spot.
That's right. So now let's roll it back and talk about what she does well, Nate. So for me, what she does really well is focusing down characters that she can. You know what I mean? Like, so I had her in my TTS League match, my first one. She came over and just annihilated Miles, just said bye-bye Miles, it was fun having you here, and and there you go. And stuff like that she's very good at. Even with Miles's rerolls, as poorly as they were in that game, it's still, you know, she's good at taking out characters like that. And then also she's really good with some repositioning game of being able to throw people and stuff out of objectives and whatnot, and making it, being able to control an area, I think.
Yep, absolutely. One of my favorite things that probably the best Valkyrie play I have seen, and it was my own Valkyrie who did this, which is, I guess, is why I'm so enamored with it, was turn one, she had moved up, gotten herself a hammer, and gotten hit by Captain Marvel. Turn two, Valkyrie's able to charge, and because she had gotten hit, was able to do her Dragon Fang, Captain America bodyguarded Captain Marvel, Captain America goes down. Got nice. The Flurry takes out Captain Marvel. So Valkyrie still then has a full action all her own. She moves to a middle gamma console and throws the size 2 character that was on it off of it.
That's amazing. That's
all
like...
for just 3 threat. So yeah. I think one of the things that she does enormously well is it causes your opponent to have to split priorities because, sure, absolutely, you want to be able to make sure that Thor doesn't get a chance to activate. But if I have Valkyrie on the other side of the board, you also like are really hesitant to let Valkyrie get a full activation because she can just start going crazy.
Exactly. You're exactly right. It's kind of pick your poison at that point with the two of them. And if you've got a full health Thor versus a full health Valkyrie, you're more likely to take down Valkyrie because she's only going to roll 3 defense and only has 6. She only has 6 health on her healthy side, just like he does. But still, I'm with you in that you definitely have to pick your poison. You have to be aware of where she is on the board because she can come in and do that damage. Like you said, it's a great play. I've had her dropped off into me, and that's just nasty as well. Having a Valkyrie drop off, especially if she's holding a hammer, is just, it's potent. It's very potent. And she's so consistent, I think. Like, one of the more consistent characters in the game, especially with that Warrior of Legend ability. So let's talk about that ability for a second, because I think it's an ability that when you look at her kit and you see she's got the throw, she's got charge, and then this Warrior of Legend ability, I think that Warrior of Legend is arguably the most important one on the card. I know that the case can be the charge is really, you know, charging, saving an action to move and attack. That's probably that's the most valuable one. But I really like the Warrior of Legend because for only 2 power, being able to change your dice 1 die for each crit or wild. So if you are doing a Dragon Fang, I mean, I'm generally going to expect to have 1 or 2 crits and wilds, you know, 1 of each, maybe 2 of one of them, something like that. So activating a Warrior of Legend and then attacking MODOK makes a lot of sense because then, oh, MODOK cancels wilds? Oh, guess what? No, he doesn't because I activated Warrior of Legend and that wild is now a hit. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that, I think, is kind of a fun little bit of her kit. And then just the consistency that comes with that to be able to push that damage through, I really love it.
Yep. You could easily argue that any of her 3 active superpowers are the best one. A throw on a 3 threat character, it's not anything fancy. It's a short throw, size 2, but she can also do it to cars and terrain and stuff, so that's really strong. So she can, if she doesn't have an enemy to hurl, she can hurl terrain at an enemy, as well as being able to move people off of objectives. The consistency, as you've already talked about in length, with Warrior of Legend is great. But the charge also is just fantastic because she already has that 2 power. She doesn't have to be with Captain America for that turn 1 charge. Mm-hmm. She can just do it regardless.
Mm-hmm. And that I think is another factor that you have to consider is the fact that that charge is just, it's, yeah, she starts with 2 power every turn. So there you go. And to roll back one final time here to her faults real quick, because I think we've covered what she does well. Well, her another fault is just the fact that she doesn't have the defenses that the stronger characters do, and that's, she's a 3 threat character. It's kind of what you would expect.
Yep, she's got the average stamina and defenses of a 3 threat character.
Exactly. So that makes all the sense to me. So now let's take a look at her affiliation. And Nate, what do you think affiliation-wise, where does she fit in the best?
The two that I like her in the most, she can fit into so many because she has a lot of things going for her. She's a very self-sufficient character
uh-huh.
who doesn't necessarily need backup. But one, I like her in Avengers. If you're able to sneak a power over to her early on turn one, she suddenly can do a Warrior of Legend into a charge,
mm-hmm.
which is a fantastic turn one, start out the gate with her. But honestly, I'm thinking I really like her in the Defenders. She's in affiliation there. It gives her access to the different types of attacks that she desperately needs to be a true, just outright assassin. And once she gets going, she kind of has that a little bit of excess of power there anyway. She may not be able to do everything she wants to, but once she gets going, one power is certainly enough for her to expense to change up an attack type.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that her base Asgard affiliation is great for her because, again, like we talked about with Thor, she is susceptible to the condition game pretty hard because she doesn't really have any way to mitigate damage incoming, stuff like that. So that's definitely something that's good for her. And then I agree with you. I think Defenders, one, she's in affiliation in Defenders, which is huge. The fact that it's a three-threat character in that affiliation with two five-threat characters in Doctor Strange and Ghost Rider, and then a six-threat character in Hulk, I just think that that's huge. And she will, like you said, get great benefit from that leadership because what did we talk about earlier? She'd have a hard time against a Cap, except in your example, where she totally annihilated him. But in general, she's going to have a hard time against a Cap or a Black Panther. Well, all of a sudden, you get to spend a power and change that to a Mystic attack, and their abilities don't happen. So I think that that's really strong. And I also really like her in Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that she's a lot of fun there, and she can be useful with the Winging It tokens because of Dragon Fang granting her a Flurry attack. So if you want to reroll dice, you can do that. So I really like that as well. And it also helps if you pop a Warrior of Legend with that. It's just, I think that that can get crazy and fun. And
mm-hmm.
I actually also kind of like her in Web Warriors because it helps her stay alive a little bit more and provides that team with a strong, low-cost damage dealer. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like
absolutely.
Miles... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to add, it also works well with her Warrior of Legend ability, where if she gets a couple of crits in a wild, but then those other dice are failures, it doesn't do anything, where now she's able to modify those as well.
Exactly. That is exactly it, dude. That is why I think that she is... I think right now... It might be that people aren't really looking at her in Web Warriors, but I think that she is a character that we might need to go reevaluate adding to Web Warrior rosters. I know that during the TTS League, there's an opportunity to change up your rosters. I'm heavily considering putting Valkyrie in my roster. So I don't know if that tells you anything or not, but I think that she would make a really good character to add to that team. And otherwise, I think she's just good, all around good. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that she fits in with every other affiliation, really no problem. So, any that you think that she absolutely should not go in?
Maybe Wakanda. She probably doesn't necessarily fit super well with the Guardians, because she can get lucky with. No, she appreciates that. No, man, I think she is definitely a really high tier character.
Yeah.
Just recently, I had a couple of the previous TTS champions on my YouTube channel. We did a tier listing with them, and they both gave Valkyrie the seal of approval to be S tier, which is up there with Shuri, because she really can go anywhere and benefit that affiliation.
Yeah, I think she's just a really strong character in general. And with that, before we get on to your favorite question, we do have two questions from some fans here. And it's Tim Simpson with, do you think Valkyrie might be the most ubiquitous three-threat character in the game currently? And he says, I think there's a strong possibility. She's so solid all around, hard to pass her up, in my opinion. And then before we answer this question, Matt Norwood said, I agree, her or Zemo. So, do you think she's the most ubiquitous three-threat character in the game right now?
It's either her or Shuri, in my opinion. Shuri just brings something that no other character can bring to the game, which is why she is such a easy plug-in to most of the different affiliations out there.
Yeah,
Valkyrie is definitely runner-up to her, and Zemo probably not too far behind there.
Yeah, I have to agree with that assessment. I think that sure, if you want to look at it in terms of ranking, if you will, Shuri number one, Valkyrie number two, Zemo number three. And the reason why I think that you would say that Valkyrie is below Shuri, like you said, Shuri, with not only her ability to reposition people, she does have some offensive capability, but also what she brings to the team with her upgrades ability is so strong. And then layer onto that that Valkyrie and Zemo kind of do the same thing.
They're very similar. They both have charge. They both are physical strikers.
They both have dice both manipulation.
Both have a little bit of dice consistency. Exactly. And so Valkyrie maybe is only – Shuri's only higher maybe because there are other models that fill Valkyrie's role that can do it a little bit better in the different affiliations.
Exactly. I think that's the only reason why there. But she is definitely up there, and I think that she is a character that you will not ever be disappointed taking on your team. Mm-hmm. So David Kirby asks us a question about Valkyrie here. Asgard or Defenders, which do you prefer for her? Defenders.
Defenders.
Definitely. I think that she's good in both. She benefits from both, but I think she is really going to shine in Defenders, personally. So,
yep.
There you go. And David Kirby also asked us a question about Thor, but we'll get to that at the end here. Let's finish up with Valkyrie. So go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, so with all of the additional releases since, I guess, back in February, actually, has she gotten better, worse, or stayed about the same?
Well, I think she, like Thor, has gotten a little better. She was already really good. But I think that she, with some of these cards, like we mentioned earlier, has gotten a little better. So, you know, the no matter the cost, the Web Warriors coming out, I think helping her, just having more affiliations available, Spider Foes. Like, look, I don't necessarily want to throw her in Spider Foes. It's not something that I think of off the top of my head, but making your opponent reroll a defense dice from a character that is an assassin type character who will likely have power to burn can be really strong. So, like, I think that she has only gotten better because there's more places to put her into lists and there's more of those helpful tactics cards that have come out that can just kind of tune her up a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I think that she's maybe slightly better because she was already really good.
Yep. I think my same compliment to Thor stands with her. She's definitely not diminished in any way, and having been out for so long, then it's its own as a compliment. I don't think that there are specifically – well, no, I guess with the Defenders coming out, she has a new affiliation that plays really well to what she needs to be doing anyway, something that's going to help her. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, I definitely think she's gotten stronger.
Yeah, gotten a little better. And so, yeah, I really like Valkyrie. I think she is a character that, weirdly, I don't play with a lot. That sounds super weird to say, but I really like. Does that make sense? Like, I don't actually get her on the table as much as I might want to, especially because I haven't been getting anybody on the table lately, but that's neither here nor there. But she's a character that I really like,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that I really need to play more of just because I know she's so good. So, yeah, let's go with our question here from David Kirby regarding Thor. And if we ever get the Fantastic Four released, Reset the Clock, because that's the new Reset the Clock.
Reset the Clock.
Thank you, Idris. And you run Thor with them, but he dies. Will you retaliate whilst yelling, "For the Thor who fought for the Fantastic Four"? And David... Obviously. I mean, what kind of operation do you think I run it over here? As cheesy as possible is where I live my life. And this is an inside joke here, I guess, a little bit. But David Kirby seems to think that Cisco and the Thong Song is my favorite ever. And I just got to say, it is not my favorite ever. But it does have a place in my heart.
I'm sure it does for you.
Yes, yes. So, Suits out there, thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. Nate, any final words on these two sweet, sweet Asgardians?
No, just if you have not already picked them up and you're kind of looking at what your next purchase should be, this is a very solid one. It's two great characters that are able to plug into multiple affiliations and do work on the table. So definitely consider picking them up if you haven't already.
Yeah, that's actually another important point I think you made, is that a lot of this game, you know, this game is so big right now, and it's only going to get bigger. And I've seen this question pop up a lot, and I know that we have a lot of new listeners here, so thank you, Nate, for addressing that. And to me, my number one first purchase post-core set is still Black Panther and Killmonger. That's number one. And then this will be my number two, because like you said, it's two great characters. One of those characters fits in the core box affiliation, in affiliation. It's already in affiliation. And you get a new affiliation with this box. And you get a really fun Extract Crisis with this box in the Fear Grips the World as the Worthy Terrorized Citizens. So I think that all around, this would be a great purchase for people just entering the game. So, yeah. With that, thank you all so much for listening, Suits. We really appreciate it. Make sure to still go and check out Black Site Studio for some of the best terrain available. It's pre-painted. All you got to do is glue it together. Pretty simple process. And you can use our code HOUSEPARTY15 for 15% off individual items over there. And also, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. We post stuff regularly over there. I'm going to be posting links whenever I am streaming on Twitch for my TTS League stuff. So we'll be doing that. I know I've got some plans for future content. I think we are going to be doing a kind of live commentary over some TTS League matches, and then we'll put that in podcast form. Maybe not me and you, Nate. Maybe me and you, Nate. I don't know. But that's something that we want to do. So let us know if that's something that interests you guys. We can talk strategy while those guys are playing, this and that. That kind of stuff sounds fun. Also, be on the lookout. We have a huge, huge announcement coming on the next House Party Protocol episode. Huge for us, anyway. It's a big deal for House Party Protocol, something that we've been wanting to do for a while, and we're finally going to be getting it off the ground. So be on the lookout for that. I'm really excited for that, and I hope that it continues to bring value to you guys. And we really appreciate everyone out there listening to us and giving us your time, because we really love doing this. And also be on the lookout for some more giveaways. We love doing that stuff. We'll probably have one in November. That'll be our next one. Maybe we'll start one in October. Haven't decided yet, but we'll see what happens. And yeah, make sure to leave us a review on the platform of your choice if you can, if you have that capability. It really helps us out. And leave us a review on Facebook if you don't have the ability to leave us a review on Spotify or Podbean or wherever you listen. A review on Facebook still helps as well. So yeah, we really appreciate that. Make sure to send us messages. We love interacting with you guys. You send us a message, we'll answer it as soon as we can. And if anybody wants to play games on TTS, shoot us a message at House Party Protocol on the Facebook page. And if I've got the time, we'll do it. So, Nate, what do you got?
Not much. Just continued excitement for all of the upcoming releases. I know even just over the course of this podcast, we now have a sneak peek at Taskmaster as a panel to play. Just got published. And so there's just always mounting excitement. The countdown to X-Men is real. The clock is being reset for the Fantastic Four, and even more importantly, Doctor Doom. Good things to come.
Oh yeah, it's going to be great. I can't wait. Taskmaster sounds awesome. Go check out that panel to play. We will update that, hopefully, and we'll have some new character cards for the next episode of House Party Protocol. And party on, Nate.
Party on, Will.
And power down, Suits.